A lot of people do.
Do you have enough time now to see what living in your own home does for people?
Yeah.
Huge effect.
Yes, it does. Let me take a swig of pop. So, yeah, they're very happy. They look out for each other. One of the guys who spent time in prison, because just because you have a prison record doesn't mean you can't live there. How long ago and what was it for? So he went in to look at the house we were offering him, and on the way in, he was just not happy, like I was forcing him to do it. And he came back out, and he was grinning ear to ear, and I said, "What happened? Why are you now so happy?" He said, "There's a bedroom. You know, if you've been to prison, you don't have any privacy at all. So to have a bedroom with a door was a big, big thing." So I knew he was happy right away. I knew they understood what a big proposition this was October 1st last year. Do you remember what day of the week October 1st was? Somebody said Friday? You are so wrong. It was a Sunday. And the reason I know it was a Sunday is because my phone was ringing off the hook. Yeah, right? See, I did know. My phone was ringing off the hook, and on Sundays I tend to be busy, right? I'm preaching somewhere. I'm doing Sunday school with somebody, and it was ringing and ringing and ringing and ringing, and I finally answered it in exasperation, you know, like, "Don't you know I preach on Sunday mornings?" And it was Carolyn, who was one of the seniors in one of the homes, and she said, "Reverend Fowler, the world building is closed. How am I going to pay my rent?" I had four different residents call me that day with the same query. She was afraid, they were afraid, that if they didn't pay on the first of the month, they were going to lose their house. So when things hit online, we got lots of comments from folks about, "Oh, poor people are horrible, homeless people are horrible, Detroit is horrible, these houses will be crack houses, they won't take care of them, they won't appreciate them, it's going to be a slum before..." Oh no, this is a chance of a lifetime for them. And they are so grateful. They've said yes to a million interviews. I had a friend from Albion in Bangladesh. He emailed me and said, "You're on the TV this morning." Yeah, I know. We're on the TV everywhere, which is good and bad. It means that we're always dealing with reporters. It's good in that, you know, other places are thinking of trying at least a version of what we've done to deal with housing insecurity where they are. We have heard from Italy, South Africa, Liberia, Canada, Mexico, Germany, Peru. I mean, we've heard from all over the world. "Would you come build here? Would you tell us how to do it?" So we finally wrote a book that answered some of the email criticisms and positive comments, and to tell other people why we did what we did and how they might do it too. And it's gone crazy. I mean, it's just been an incredible... We had no idea. We knew it would be a good thing. We had no idea it would be a trendsetter. Yeah.
Could you do way, way more if you could get more dollars?
Yeah, so it's all private dollars. In our other programs, we use government money. But in the last few years, HUD has changed its direction, so we've lost four different really good programs. And before that, we lost our program for homeless women with AIDS, even though AIDS in Detroit is off the chart. They decided to go a new direction. So we were afraid that we would say to you, "If you move in here and you do the program and you pay your rent for 7 years, we're going to give you the house," and then have HUD come say, "Oops, we're not going to fund that anymore." And so we'd have to go back to you and say, "Sorry, we lied," right? So we've done it all privately through foundations, corporations, religious organizations, individuals, and I've been amazed at how it's come. None. Yeah. They are, because you watch HGTV and you say, "Oh, they did this for $4,000. First of all, they're doing it on wheels, right? We didn't build on wheels because if you're homeless or a poor senior, you don't have any way to pull it, right? You're not going to do it with your bicycle. They're 10,000 pounds. and you don't have any place to pull it to. On HGTV, they're going to the mountains, they're going to the ocean. I can tell you, if you parked one of these tiny homes on Belle Isle, you'd get arrested, right? So the other thing is, once you put something on wheels, it depreciates. A brand new car, the day you drive it off the lot, it's worth less. We wanted something that would appreciate so that if and when they want to sell it, it's worth the same or more. Right, so we build every house on a foundation, and the foundation in running the utilities and a loan is over $20,000. Wow. And then we use a general contractor to build the shell, put the roof on, electrical and plumbing, and we use volunteers for everything else. So school groups, church groups, corporate groups come in, and they do the drywall and the painting and the flooring and the cabinets and the countertops and the decorating. We furnish every house, and we have a big tour, six at a time, because it's cheaper to build six at a time. And then we move the tenants in, and you can say, I like this furniture, I want to keep it, and it's yours, it's free. Or you can say, I hate this furniture, I have my own, we take it out, no charge, you have your own. Or you can keep some, take some. We don't care. We'll use it in another house, right? Often what happens with the seniors is they want to bring their own stuff because there's an emotional attachment to pictures and sofas and stuff, and then they get it there and they find out the Lazy Boy is just way too big. And so we'll work with them again to figure out what can go and what can stay. It's an interesting process. And then they really do decorate. They may take down the curtains and put up a different color, or shower curtain and put up a different shower. We don't care. We want them to feel at home. You know, if you've come out of a shelter, you don't have any control of anything. You don't control when the lights are on or off, what temperature it is, what you get to eat, when you get to eat, whether or not you have a snack, whether you have company, what's on TV. You don't decide anything. So the day you move in as a renter, all of that changes. You can have company. You can have somebody spend the night. You're an adult. You don't need my permission. You can have a pet. We have a dog already who lives in one of the lofts with a younger couple, and they've taught the dog to climb up the stairs and get in bed with them. Who would have thought? So they're very happy, and they've meshed well together. We're getting ready to move the next six in, and so we're going to work very hard at assimilation to make sure that everybody's a part of the group moving, and we'll have to do that every six. This fall, we're ready to start six in September. I mentioned yesterday, HGTV is coming to shoot eight episodes of a brand new show. I don't know what it'll be called yet. And they're engaging the Tarek from Flip or Flop, who's going to come be a star on the show. So we're really excited, although my life is going to change dramatically, I'm sure. Camera crews can be pretty demanding. But it'll be good for the development, and it'll be good for Cass, for sure. So that's the tiny home thing that we're building. Yes?
When did that start?
The very first house was finished just after I was here the last time, in September of 2016.
And have you had any issues with people not being able to pay their rent?
We have not had to put a single person out. Yeah. So on the cover of your annual report, you'll see some of the homes. So the yellow home is the home with a red door, was sponsored by the Junior League, and that's their big thing, is a red door campaign, so that's why we painted the door red. Lots of flowers there. I gotta open and see who else is on there. The first house in the corner, I was talking yesterday about the pastor who has epilepsy. That's him. That's a Tudor house. And there you can see the stairwell to the loft with the young adults. The very top house is called a Katrina Cottage. It has a metal roof that was donated. So lots of things get donated, which saves us quite a bit of money, in addition to the labor money. If you had to pay for everything, it would be much more than what we're paying now. Did I answer your question? So they're running between $45,000 and $55,000. This next build, we have a general contractor who's doing the work pro bono, and the builders, Michigan Builders Association, they're doing it pro bono, so the cost will come down significantly. But you can't do it for free. I mean, it's a real house.
The companies are getting on board now that they see.
Yeah, so what has happened is the Michigan Builders approached us. Can we get involved? And the general contractor approached us. But initially, nobody knew how wildly popular this would be. So I'm glad we didn't build them all at once, right? Because we've learned cost savings going along and quality control going along. And The reason we're adding the solar, we were told, we put in spray-in insulation, which is very expensive, and the best R rating on the windows to keep it cheap. And then this winter, we got hit with 10 days of 5 degrees, and their electric bill, which is the only bill they pay is electric. We pay everything else, went through the roof. So with the solar arrays that we're adding, their electric bill should be cut in half, and if they use less of it, it should be eliminated completely for 10 years. So we're pretty excited about that. So they pay rent based on square footage. They pay $1 per square foot. So if they live in a 250 square foot house, they pay $250. 300, 300, 400, 400. 400 is the biggest we build. So that's the biggest amount they would pay, which is roughly half of what they would pay anywhere else. And they pay the electric bill. We don't pay cable. We don't pay phone. If you want that, you pay yourself. Since the houses are paid for up front, we've already raised the money. We don't need their money, right? So we use their money to pay their water bill, their insurance, their security, and their property taxes. If they pay everything on time for 7 years, we give them the house and they start paying the bills. We know they can do it because we've used their money to pay their bills. We're just making sure they're not going to lose their house to arrearages on water or property taxes, which is how you lose it. If it's not a foreclosure because of mortgage, right?
250 square feet, do two people live in it?
They can, but you better love him.
I'm thinking 250 square feet, that's like a bed.
So no, so it comes in, although they're very different, you can see they're very different inside and out on purpose because poor people tend to live in boxy, bland, ugly housing, and we wanted them to be attractive inside and out. So they, most of them have very tall ceilings, lots of windows, ceiling fans, space is conserved, we do hot water on demand, there's no tank, there's no furnace, so lots of things you expect in a traditional house, they don't have to give up space for that. We have a tool bank, so they don't have to store lawnmowers, paints, all that stuff, they just borrow. They don't yet. They will eventually. They don't yet.
What is hot water on demand?
So it comes in cold. It gets heated. I don't know the scientific of it, but it's just a box on the wall. Maybe somebody else does, but it saves you from constantly heating water you're not using, right? Do you? Okay, yeah. It's great. It's a great system.
You say 250, a loft wouldn't be counted as
250. It is.
It is counted.
Yeah. So you're thinking small casket-like. It is not. It is that you'd be closed in, right? His bedroom is in the, you're talking, the Katrina house here with the blue roof, that's one of the ones with the bedrooms. The yellow porch that Gladys is on, it has a bedroom as well. David's, the tutor, is simply a studio, and you can see he's on a walker, so he's quite happy to have a space that's
the prisoner said, he came out of there happy because he saw a bedroom.
Yeah. Not all of them have a bedroom. Some are studios.
Okay.
Yeah. Not yet. That'll be round two.
Murphy beds ever?
Some, yes. Not all.
Do you know how large the tiny houses are that HGTV has?
So there's tend to fit on a trailer. So there's tend to be smaller, although they do more with lofts. As we get older, the less you're able to go up and down those darn stairs. So we're only doing lofts for younger people, quite frankly. When we get to building with families with children, you have to do a separate bedroom per gender of child and a separate bedroom for adults. So we're not to that point yet, so this may not be gospel, but we're probably looking 400 to 550 and then lofts probably on both sides. But the ones on HGTV have to fit on a long, narrow trailer, so they don't have sort of the shapes and sizes we do. Yeah. All right. When I was in Traverse City this summer at Bayview, somebody took me to see their tiny homes, and they're roughly 800 square feet in luxury tiny homes that are in walkway in between. I'm assuming they're much like here, that people use them for the summer season primarily, But they're $400,000 a piece. Yep. Yep. Yeah, so somebody from the Wall Street Journal wrote a rather negative article about how small they are, and I thought, you're from New York. What are you talking about? You know, I've been there. I've been to Europe where people live in very small spaces. And traditionally, here's the thing. Traditionally in our country, our houses were smaller when our families were larger. Now our families are smaller and our houses are larger. It doesn't make any sense, right? It just doesn't. So you can see, and looking at the map G, that there was only one structure on the land. We were building on vacant land, which means more trouble bringing in the sewer lines and the electric lines. And it took us a long time to get electric lines on the tooth. No, it was too far gone. It was right at the corner of the expressway and the circle there, and we took it down. So we're busy buying up some more property and plan to develop Woodrow Wilson, which is the main thoroughfare as well, so there are businesses and services for people. All right, so that's housing. Looks like I have a couple minutes. Food, housing, healthcare. We offer two free medical clinics that people can come in with or without insurance to be seen by a doctor, and Wayne State medical students who not only diagnose them and give them a prescription, they fill it before they leave, which is the big thing, because even though all the hospitals will see you and tell you what's wrong with you, they will not give you the medicine. And without the medicine, it doesn't matter if you know or not, right? So they work with pharmaceutical companies to provide sample meds that they can dole out in quantities that make sense. We also run a day program for developmentally disabled adults. We have 135 of them. You can see them on page 3, who come 5 days a week learning basic life skills. And some of them have jobs, you can see there. They are God's gift to the planet. Intellectually, they're slower, but in terms of heart capacity, they beat us all hands down. They are just loving, warm, genuine human beings. On the next page, you'll see unemployment and jobs. So we started, somebody asked me about this yesterday, we started picking up illegally dumped tires in the city of Detroit in 2007. As you can see in the bottom photo, there are still plenty to pick up. They're not only out in plain sight, they're stuffed in garages and houses and businesses. People drop them, even though you have to pay a fee when you get tires changed for recycling. Unscrupulous folks bring them downtown in the middle of the night and drop them everywhere. And then they remain. And they become a breeding ground for insects and rodents. And occasionally somebody sets them on fire. So you have really bad problems with poison in the air. And of course, cutting the grass around them is ridiculous. So far, we've picked up 90,000 tires at no charge to the city of Detroit and employed 12 men continuously since 2007, making mats and then sandals and keychains. So we've taken a liability and turned it into an asset. Then we developed jobs for developmentally disabled adults. 80% of DD adults are unemployed. 80%. So we started this shredding business because most of them can't read. I said to my lawyer and doctor friends, give us your sensitive information and we will shred it. I promise it's more secure at CAS than anywhere on the planet. We have bells and whistles and alarms and cameras, but the people can't read it, write it, remember it, or tell it. So we started just with three itty-bitty office shredders from Staples, and two people took off the clips and three people really slow. Took us about a year and a half to do a ton of paper. Then we made enough to get bigger shredders. We had 15, I think, people employed. They didn't need the Staples anymore. We could do a ton of paper in a month. And then there's a long story that I don't have time to tell. We won some money from Chase Bank and got industrial size shredder. We can do a ton of paper an hour. The developmentally disabled stand along a conveyor belt like Ethel and Lucy on the chocolate factory, and they pull out colored paper. By that I mean paper with yellow or blue or red. You get less money for paper with color because they have to pull out the dye before they recycle it. But we're able to make a bale at a time, and we sell 27 tons at one time to a paper mill in Wisconsin. By taking out the middle person, we get three times the amount of money. So now we have 50 people shredding paper in a city that burns most of its garbage in an incinerator, which I believe is tagged to the asthma rate, by the way. But and they're all happy. I mean, you see them coming in with new watches and new shoes and new hats and new coats. And I went to the movies and I'm going on a date because you like your job? Yes, they say. They like the money. And they're very faithful workers. Most recently, we started working with solar because I was looking for jobs that we could do living wage, full-time living wage jobs for people who don't have any sort of income coming in. And because all the tiny homes are electric, and I was worried about the power going out and them not having any juice. So we made these simple solar generators, very primitive, but enough light, even in Michigan on an overcast day, enough light to make, to charge a cell phone, to charge your computer, to run a TV for 4 hours, to run the lights for 6 hours, to run a fan. So, you know, good enough to get you through a crisis. Not central air, but... And then Maria hit Puerto Rico. And I thought, we've got to do something. This was September, and they were predicting folks would be without electricity for... So I put a picture up on Facebook and said to my friends, we know how to make these. We can ship them to Puerto Rico to help people who can't afford a generator or can't afford gasoline. Can you help us? We'd like to send 15. And I've got good friends. They gave us enough to build 50, and we flew them down to Puerto Rico, met with the bishop, said, tell us the hardest hit part of the island, and give me a pastor connection, and we'll take them there, and the pastor can help determine who needs them. So let me back up a minute. So we took a Green Industries man with us, and we get to the airport, and I say to him, Mark, he's, I think, 48 years old, tall, bear of a man, nice, writes poetry. I said, have you ever been to an island before? And he said, yes, Reverend Fowler, Belle Isle and Bablo. So I thought, okay. We ended up with separate seats on the flight and landed in Atlanta, and he came running to me and said, I forgot Gross Eel. But he's only been to Gross Eel because we deliver products there. You know, he's not going there to sail. And I'm thinking, oh, Lordy. Okay, so again, we're in separate seats. We land in San Juan and get to the hotel, and the hotel doesn't have any lights. You know, we're on the third floor with 50 generators we're having to carry up and down in the dark. It's just a mess. And I said to him after we're done and sweating like pigs, well, Mark, have you ever been on an island before? I'm sorry, have you ever seen the ocean before? And he said, no. That's that guy. So before we went to work that morning, we went to the ocean, and he stood watching the waves and cried like a baby. That's him. That's him. So, you know, I've been everywhere. My dad was a teacher. We always traveled in the summer. It was usually in a station wagon, rarely ever on a plane, but you think of all the people who never get to leave the city and don't know about the big world out there. So we drove to the hardest hit part of the island with our gear, and we some of the roads were washed out. Clearly the wires were still down, and we set up 50 churches and individuals with solar. And then before leaving, learned of a school. So we are working with a school to set them up as well. But since coming back, we got some press about it. We've heard from Liberia. So next year, we're going to take a team to Liberia. If you know anybody with frequent flyer miles, I'm looking for a bunch of them. But we'll take somebody from Green Industries, too, who's never left the country. So, but we're going to a school. One of my members is from Liberia, and she established a school there that has 300 students. And no electricity. It's not even on the grid. So in 1 week's time, we plan on powering up every classroom so they have lights and fans and computers and the internet. And I think it will be a life-changing experience for them, and it certainly will be a life-changing experience for our guys. So we're pretty excited about what we're doing with solar, and that I'm supposed to stop because I've gone too long. So food, housing, healthcare, and jobs, that's what we do in the city of Detroit. Feel free to take your annual report. If you want a book, I brought a couple books, on the first book and the second book on tiny homes. If you don't, you're not going to hurt my feelings. I'm just supposed to do it. Yeah.
But it's not a separate job, obviously, for you. But would you talk just for a second? Most of us as Methodist preachers go into a church. The more needs the church has, the harder your job. You already had that going.
Mm-hmm. So Cass is a small congregation, about 100 members. It's a very faithful congregation. They come, gorgeous church, Tiffany windows, largest 19th century pipe organ in the state of Michigan. Early on, it was a very affluent church. They would come and have their parakeets blessed. Actually, next Sunday, we're having a blessing of the animals because I have a new dog, and I thought it was a way for the church to meet my new pup. So it didn't have, and I didn't have a lot of deaths. I didn't have a lot of weddings. People lived together in my church. And the nonprofit has grown over the years. 2 years ago, we added a deputy director, Kim Huddlin, who was an attorney for GM and worked with them through the bankruptcy. Very smart. So she's handling day-to-day operations now, and I'm doing much more speaking and fundraising and networking and that sort of thing. So my job has changed over time. It still keeps me running, but it's a different kind of running. I do. I'm there almost about once a month. I'm gone preaching somewhere else, but I like to be there because they have a right to demand that I'm there. They pay my salary, right? And I like to know what's going on. I actually feel bad when I'm not there. But you have to do it. And we have a great team. In addition to Reverend John Reynolds, we have Sue Patoot, who's a deacon who handles all our volunteers. We see 7,000 volunteers a year at the social services. So it's a lot of people to recruit and welcome and orient and get tools for and thank. And so she's working very hard as well. So it's not just me. I have a bunch of people. All right. You've been very good. You've been very good. Oh, thank you. Thank you. Thank you very much.